Good evening, family. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Christopher. Very, very grateful and very, very honored to be standing before you today, YPG. You guys are a beautiful group and also a little bit intimidating. I remember I got here. I was reborn into this program December the 16th of 2007, and right around October, November, I was online looking for some meetings to go to, and this was one of the meetings that I saw, and it kind of came out at me because it said young people's group, and I thought to myself as I was looking at it, and I was like, young people's group, no one young, you know, tries to get sober. You know, I know I didn't when I was young. There was no way. I mean, I didn't even believe that I was an alcoholic, you know, when I was young. But it's awesome being here. And my first year or so, my sponsorship family, we frequented here during our, what do we call those? Well, we would travel around. It was like a traveling road show. And we traveled to different meetings. And this was one of the meetings that we'd come to on Thursdays when you guys were over here, and it's just always been an awesome meeting to come to, and I thank you guys for allowing me to speak before you. I don't know how long I have. I'll just keep talking until someone tells me to sit down and be quiet. December the 16th, 2007 is my sobriety date. I sponsor others. I have a sponsor. I've gone through the steps. I've taken other cats through the steps. I do service work. Right now, one of the things that I'm doing is I am the chair for the Steps to Freedom Steering Committee. We're going to be meeting this Sunday over at 3333 at 7 o'clock. If you want any service work and you want to help out with that Steps to Freedom, it's a 12-step recovery workshop. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't mean to be plugging, but that's part of what I do. I wouldn't be doing this, and I wouldn't be standing here hadn't been for you guys in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an introvert. Can everyone hear me okay? Yeah. I'm an introvert. I'm shy. You know, one psychiatrist diagnosed me to be a manic depressive, suffering from a case of social anxiety disorder. I don't like social settings. I don't like being in front of people, and I don't like a whole lot of people looking at me, you know. So it took this program, you know, to break me out of that proverbial introverted shell, and really get into fellowshipping and being a part of. I always thought that I lived my life and I could live it by myself. I don't need any help from anyone, and that kept me on that up and down roller coaster. In and out and in and out of this program for about 10 years and just living in hell. I mean, I know what you're talking about, brother. It's really hard to put your finger on, and it's really hard to explain, but that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, I lived it. And, excuse me, the crazy thing about it is that I was in it for so long, it became natural. It became comfortable almost. So I was comfortable in my discomfort because it was just what I knew. And I didn't know how to get out, you know. I am selfish, self-centered. I don't care about anybody but me. And my life proves it. You know, I've always focused on what it is that I wanted and how I was going to get mine. I think of me all the time, and you know, that's just how I'm woven together. I don't know if you're the same, but I always thought that, you know, I'm unique and I'm not like anybody else, and that again was something that kept me revolving in and out of this program because I didn't think that I was like you guys. My birthday is July 22nd, 1968. I am an only child except for my two brothers and my sister. I have five children. by four different women. I have a mother, I have a father, and I have a lot of cousins and a lot of family. My grandparents had a lot of children, and therefore I have a lot of cousins and stuff. And I had a real close-knit family growing up, and that was pretty much who I hung with when I was growing up. I had a really, really, really awesome childhood as I look back. When I was in it, and, you know, I would always, you know, talk about my mother and my father and everything like that, and I don't get to do anything, but I had a real awesome childhood. Rooted in family, we went on camping trips, and we'd all get together. I mean, all of us, I think my father has seven brothers and sisters, and my mother has five, and so we would all get together and just go do stuff and go camping. Right off rip, selfish and self-centered, this illness centers primarily in my mind. That was what you guys told me when I first got here. I'm selfish and self-centered. My illness centers primarily in my mind. I have a thinking problem. Okay. So back growing up, proving this point, I'm selfish and self-centered. Don't care about anything else. Have a real good childhood. Awesome parents, you know, taking us everywhere, going to Disneyland with all the family. I want to say there was close to about 30 of us. So there's like a mob of us, and we're just getting into the park, and we're, you know, breaking up into little groups and everything like that. My brother and myself, we walk over to one of the little gift shops, you know, where you get the souvenirs while everyone was doing their thing. And I see a Mickey Mouse keychain. My father gave me some money, so I had money in my pocket. But I didn't want to spend it because we just got there and I might find something else that I want. And so I take this Mickey Mouse keychain and put it in my pocket and I walk out. Didn't think anything of it. Didn't think anyone saw me. Well, the Mickey Mouse police went and talked to my father. And then what ended up happening is I went back to Mickey Mouse, you know, the jail and stuff in the back of the park. And then myself, my father, and my entire family had to get escorted out of the park. So all 30 of us, right in front of these Mickey Mouse police, getting escorted out of the park because of me and my selfish and self-centeredness. And that's how it was for me. I mean, I have these real good situations, and I think that I need, or I think that this isn't good enough, and I want to get something that I want. And that's how it was. I mean, throughout my entire life, is how it was. Even before alcohol, the doctor's opinion kind of defines alcoholism, at least in my mind when I read it, as someone afflicted with alcoholic addiction. So, in me saying I'm an alcoholic, I'm saying that I'm an addict as well. So, during my story, I'm just going to refer to everything as alcohol, even though that there are other things in my story. It says alcohol in any form, whether, you know, there was a liquid alcohol, there was a powdered alcohol, there was a rocked up alcohol, there was the alcohol in the pill form, and all that is part of my story. So just keep in mind, as I'm going through it, everything is going to be alcohol because it's all the same, and I didn't know that at first, you know. I started coming around to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that I'm bouncing around. I suffer from an illness that centers primarily in my mind, and so I can't stay focused on one thing. I got to bounce around. But I hope that at the end I make some kind of a point. I smoked a lot of weed in my youth. But you too? So I'm going to be referring to everything as alcohol, and that's it. Again, was an introvert, very shy, didn't like being around people. And so when I grew up pretty much in like an introverted bubble. My parents kept me from a lot of things. My father was, both my parents were in law enforcement. My father was a sheriff and my mother was a CO that worked at one of the local prisons out there in California. I grew up in Stockton, California. So I didn't get to see a whole lot of stuff, but I knew a lot of the people. I didn't grow up in the projects, but I grew up like two blocks from the projects. And so all the people that I went to school with were people that were doing all these other kind of things, but I never knew, and I didn't get involved in it when I was growing up. You know, I got offered a joint or, you know, some wine every now and then by some of the cats in the neighborhood. But, you know, I didn't need it. So I just said no, you know, just say no. And so I just said no until my senior year in high school. My father gave me a vehicle. And then because I got that vehicle, all of a sudden I have all these friends who now want to come hang out with me and be cool with me. And they introduced me to Old English and marijuana. And so those were my first things. And then something happened that never happened before. I wasn't shy anymore. I could be in front of people, and I can go up and I could talk to the girl, and, you know, and I could be the life of the party, and I can be the clown, and I can, you know, and it was just different. And it was the solution that I used for a long time. That was the start. I took a year break after graduating from high school, and then I went into the Navy. And then I was able to travel. And I traveled, you know, from here to Virginia. I mean, I'm saying here like we're in California. From California to Virginia, up to the Connecticut. I went to submarine school up in Connecticut. And I had a real good time. And I didn't do any of the other things when I was in the military, but they showed me new and improved ways on how to drink. Not just beer, but also, you know, some of that alcohol stuff, the hard stuff. And I liked it because I was able to get that jolt, you know. I was able to get there a little quicker, you know, with a couple of shots. And that was what's up. I was 19 at the time, and so I was underage and everything, but they let me drink on the base, which was hella cool. And so that's what was up. And I didn't have to go anywhere to get, you know, to go get dancing and everything like that. There was an enlisted men's club on the base, and a lot of the girls from the, you know, the neighborhood would come to the base. They let them on the base. And so that's what was up. I didn't have to go anywhere. I just had to go to the base, and I can get my drink, and I can get my little Mac on, and that's what was up. And so that's what I did. I'm not an alcoholic, is what I'm thinking at the time. I don't have a problem with alcohol. So through my entire 20s, I'm drinking, and I'm thinking that I'm managing my life. I told you that I have 5 children by 4 different women, and most of them came during my 20s. I'm 40-something now, I think. I need to calculate it out because I try not to remember. But anyway, because of my selfish and self-centeredness and, you know, not thinking that I have this problem, but I do have this problem, but I'm managing my life, I believe. You know, I have a pretty good job. At least I had several good jobs. I'm an electrician, and so I was able to go, you know, many places and get some jobs and make some good money. Well, this continued on. I'm going to skip from 19, 10 years past that to about 29. All this time I'm drinking, I'm thinking I'm managing my life, and I'm jumping in and out of relationships, thinking that it's okay, and it's them, and it's her, and it's her mama, you know? So it's never me. I don't have the problem. These outside entities are the problem. So exactly. So I'm 29. Something's happening. Something's changing. Something's not working the way that it's supposed to be working, and maybe I might need to reel this in a bit. You know, maybe because I'm going through the couches scraping up $1.19 so I can run down to the Quickie Mart to get me a 40, maybe I need to back up and slow down a little bit. And so I do. You know, I get real involved in the church. I become a Bible teacher. I teach Sunday school. You know, I reduce my drinking. I get a real nice place. And my daughters are living with me at the time. One, I guess, is 4, and the other one was 7 or 8. My 2 daughters, and they're living with me, and everything is okay. And this is a turning point in my life. One of my childhood friends, he just got out of prison up in Houston, and he moves back home to Stockton. And he's down on his luck. His mother doesn't want him to come live with me. So I allow him to come, you know, stay with me for a little while until he gets a job and gets on his feet. And like the first couple of nights there, you know, I fixed up one of the rooms for him. He's having all kind of traffic just come in and out, in and out, in and out of the house. And I don't know what's going on, you know. And I see these people inside my house, and it's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, dude, what's up? I mean, what are you doing? I got to go to work in the morning, man. I got my daughters here, and you got all these people, you know, up in my house, you know. And I'm naive to it, and I knew about all those other things, you know, the rocked up alcohol and stuff like that. But I never, like I said, I never ventured over there. It was just the alcohol and the marijuana at that time. But he said, here. I said, okay, and I tried it. And from that point in trying it, I was hooked, and in my life steadily declined. That was in 1997 or something like that. And that's when I was first introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because then my mother, who was a CO, went back to school, got her degree, and came back to work for the prison as a youth counselor. And so she's seeing all these young people coming in and out and in and out. And so when she seen me acting crazy, because I immediately just started acting crazy, dumping money out of my bank account. And, you know, I sent my daughters to go live with their mothers and everything like that, because, you know, this what was up now, you know, it's all about me. And so I don't want anybody, you know, in my way while I do this. So she sits me down in front of the TV, and this is how I know that no human power could relieve my alcoholism. She sits me down in front of the television with this workbook and this video on how drugs and alcohol, you know, affect your life and affect your brain and, you know, block the receptors that are going in and out and cause you all this. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's the reason why. Okay, so self-knowledge, I'm getting a bug. Okay, so, you know, filled out all the workbooks, and I, you know, travel on, and I go get drunk again, and I keep getting drunk, and I keep getting drunk. I had a stint from 2000 to 2003 where I was in a residential treatment program up in San Jose, California, and it was real good for me, because I really got a firsthand look, I believe, on how I function and how this program functions. And, you know, getting a sponsor and working the steps, and, you know, the years previous, I didn't know anything about it. I guess it was only like 2 or 3 years previous. You know, I would just go to meetings. I thought that's what it was all about, just going to meetings. And so I went to meetings, and then I went and got drunk. I went to meetings, and then I went and got drunk. But I get to this program, and they're teaching me a whole lot of stuff. They teach me about Jesus and all that. But they encourage me to go to meetings and get a sponsor. And so I asked a man to help me out, you know, and he was my sponsor. But the funny thing is, he and his sponsorship family only believed in going through a step a year. And so me not knowing, I was like, okay, well, I'll stay on step one for a year, you know, and that didn't work out. I ended up getting drunk again. But anyway, so 3 years in this residential treatment program, getting, you know, going to a lot of meetings. And for the first time, I start fellowshipping with people, and I start getting these friends and getting numbers and making phone calls and whatnot. And I feel okay, but that's all that I was doing, was fellowshipping and going to meetings, you know, doing the meeting makers make it, you know, doing a selfish thing. You know, it's a selfish program is what I heard, and so I focused on myself. That was easy for me because I'm selfish and self-centered. Didn't try and help out anybody, you know. And obviously, if I'm going through a step a year, then I'm not doing the steps. So 2003, I was in this residential treatment program all that time. And then in 2003, I move out. But I stay close, and I still come back and everything like that. But I'm moving out on my own. And slowly but surely, my meetings started to dwindle. My phone calls to these people started to dwindle. And then I moved from San Jose back to Stockton. And I'm driving home from my mother's house. And then I get to a stop sign, make a right, go home, or make a left, and go get some alcohol. Hadn't been enlarging my spiritual life. Haven't been reading my big book. Didn't have a sponsor because my whole network was in San Jose. But I'm in Stockton now, you know, which is about a good hour and a half, 2 hours away, you know, and I hadn't made any connections in Stockton, even though that's my hometown, you know. So I went and got drunk. And then you know what happened from there. You know, I had no foundation, and then back and forth, in and out of this program, not focusing and not pinpointing what it is that I need to be doing. It's all about me, and I don't care anything about you, or anybody, you know. I tore up relationships with everybody who I love and was dear to me on countless occasions. So in, I guess, 2007, I come to this program again on the brink of being kicked out. You know, the ball and chain is tired. I mean, she's been going through this for, you know, 12 years already, and she's done, you know, just shy of packing all my stuff and just kicking it out on the porch. And so in desperation, you know, I start looking for some meetings. I got to get back into AA, you know, and this time around, I still thought that I could do this, that I don't need anybody. And then I go and I go to a meeting. I get a sponsor. This is about November. And I'm still thinking, you know, even going to meetings, I'm still thinking that I can do it. I'm still thinking that it's me. I can do this. I just need to get a little AA in me, and I'll be okay. And so I'm still going to meetings. I got me a sponsor. He's got me reading the big book, but I'm still drinking. And then something happened. My higher power helped me out with a moment of clarity, and he played the tape back for me for the previous 30-some-odd years. And he helped me to see that it wasn't going to get any better, that I was going to go right back to where I came from. And then I was going to end up dead, and I was going to lose everything. So for the first time in my drinking career, I gave this program a chance. I fully gave myself to this program. I went to my sponsor and I said, hey, you know, I ain't been doing the do, but I'm ready to do this thing. What do I need to do? And then he started me on this path. And it wasn't easy. I mean, it was hard looking at myself and admitting these faults, admitting that that the relationship that I had with that one was my fault, and the relationship that I had with that one was my fault. The reason why that it's no longer, it was my fault. I was married once when I was 20 years old, I mean, right after I got into the military. And I had her convinced that it was her fault that I left her. And it was a slap in the face once God showed me that it wasn't her fault, that it was mine. I was even convinced. I believed my own lies, you know. So one of the first things that my sponsor had me to do was to get out of my head. He told me to go pick somebody up. Now, at this time, I'm having all kind of issues. The ball and chain wants me out. You know, I got bills, my job. I still have it, but, you know, they're getting wind that I'm drinking and I'm driving their company vehicle. And pardon me, but I'm driving their vehicle down to the dope spot, you know, and they're getting wind of all this. And so I get called in to the owner's office, and he asked me, you know, am I okay? You know, he pretty much gave me a warning, but I knew what was going on. I knew that he knew. So, I mean, I have all these things going on, and he tells me that I need to go and pick somebody else up and bring them to a meeting. And I didn't know how that was going to help me, because I'm selfish and self-centered, and I want to be helped. Why do you want me to go and pick this other person up? He said, just do it. I said, okay. So I continue to do that. I continue to do what you guys tell me to do, reading page 86, 87, and 88 every day, and, you know, trying to start my morning off. One of the awesome things, the most awesome thing, one of the first most awesome things that I guess I realized or started to understand was that this program and how much of it has to do with drinking. I was, when we were going through the third step and I did the third step prayer, the third step prayer doesn't say anything about alcohol. It says, relieve me of the bondages of self. And I was able to grasp that because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. And I'm asking this power that's greater than me to relieve me of the bondages of me. And that made all the sense in the world to me. So I have been the cause. I've been the problem in my life this whole time, and I didn't even know it. This program is wonderful, marvelous, spectacular. It's a miracle. And it's a miracle that I'm standing here before you guys today. I learned a whole lot about who I am, and I learned to love who I am in the fourth step. And then all the people that I've hurt, I never tried to look at anything from a perspective other than my own, you know. But when my sponsors said, you know, all these people that have harmed me and these people that I have resentments against, and then he said, what was my part in it? You know, I was stuck, and I had to take this thing and look at it from a totally different perspective, and I didn't know how to do it, and I had to get help with that, you know, because all these years I'm pointing the finger and I'm thinking that I have nothing to do with it. So I learned that I had something to do with everything. Then I had to do the amends, and it was just awesome to me that just by following the instructions given and just walking through the fear, because I had a lot of fear because I hurt a lot of people, you know, making appointments with them and, you know, sitting before them and then looking them in their faces and admitting that I was wrong and asking what I could do to right the wrong was really, really humbling, and that hurt as well. But in a lot of the situations, something unexpected happened. My youngest daughter's mother, she's about 6'2", you know, dark, black, Amazon-looking woman, okay? Just big, and she's thick, you know? And she was one of my drinking partners, and we drank together. We would go through bottles of wine, and then we would wrestle, you know what I'm saying? I mean, for real. And so this was going on in my mind as I'm thinking, I'm going to go to her and make amends to her. What's going to happen is she's going to end up kicking me in my nuts, and then we're going to fight, you know. But I go into this meeting with her, and she says, Christopher, I did more harm to you than you did to me. And that was just so uplifting, and it was a miracle, and it was relieving, and it was spiritually for me reassuring. It gave me a whole lot of hope that this thing does really work. You know, I had all these fears. I have this illness that centers in my mind, and I painted this really crazy picture, but it didn't happen the way that I thought it. And if I would not have gone through it, then I wouldn't have got the, you know, I wouldn't have experienced the promises that came from just walking through it and following instructions. I mean, that's just the way that it's been for me in this program. At, I don't know, when do I talk to? I don't know. Okay, thank you. So this program is working. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. At least my sponsor says I'm doing okay. I do a detox meeting over at Axe for my first year and a half, and that helps out tremendously. I'm picking cats up, not sponsoring anybody, but I'm doing everything that I can to try and help out, which is unlike me. Then I get to 1 year. When I got to 1 year, it seemed like all hell broke loose, and I had to put what all the stuff that I learned up to that point to the test to see if it worked. I mean, I believed that I was being tried at the time. I lost my job. Well, the job that I had, the company went under because, oddly enough, the people who ran it, the owners, they drank and did other stuff. And, you know, they drank the company under. They drank up all the money. And so there were many times that I had to wait for my check, and my check didn't come. And, you know, I would try and cast a check or deposit a check, and it would bounce and stuff like that. That was during the latter part of it. But finally they went under. They went out of business, and I found myself without a job. You know, I have two sons, a ball and chain, a mother-in-law, you know, and a house, and I don't know how I'm going to make it from day to day, you know. But the big book says clearly that all I have to do is put my faith and trust in Him, and do the next right thing. And this is a, it says that this is a way of living that will solve all of my problems. That I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. And so, as afraid as I was and as scared as I was, I did just that. I picked up my first couple of sponsees during that period of time when I didn't know